Welcome to Move the Needle. This show is designed to inform, educate, motivate, and provide perspective on all things related to pharmacy provided immunization services. Let's start moving the needle.
So looking at and hearing both Christina and yourself, John, I'm hearing a lot of discussion about the evolution of the practice. I'm always thinking, and my training and experience have always told me that change in pharmacy can only happen in two ways. Of course, we have to teach and train people, which we have done eloquently for years. But on the other side, once these emergency decrees go away and the PrEP Act sunsets, will the boards of pharmacy truly step up? Are they doing this today? Are we making it a focus for the boards of pharmacy to embrace these changes and truly now take this opportunity to also do a little evolution on their own? Because for the practice to change at the bench level, that has to take place. Of course, you talked about billing and the billing, you know, the evolution of billing and separating pharmacy and medical billing and getting CLIA waivers and all those are all good things, but we need regulations and our boards of pharmacy really need to embrace these changes. And are we seeing that happening? Are we, and John, you represent NCPA, a very large and impactful organization, and you collaborate with the other organizations of pharmacy. Is this becoming a focus? Are we really getting and now and realizing that we need change to truly take place? And are we seeing any movement?
Yeah, Ed, I'm really glad that you brought that up, and I'll give my thoughts and certainly interested in Christina's perspective. But we've got a number of our members that serve on state boards of pharmacy, and I think we are seeing the needle start to move in the right direction. There's still a tremendous amount of work to be done. As a rule, I think, you know, what I'm saying, and I served on the Board of Pharmacy in Virginia for 8 years, a number of years ago. But even then, I think boards of pharmacy were starting to become more progressive and really starting to take a look at some of these issues. Recently, I know a number of boards are looking at workplace issues. There have been, you know, prescription errors to occur as a result of staffing shortages. So I know the board is very attuned to those issues because, as we all know, the reason these boards exist is to ensure the safety of the public. So I think that's workplace issues are becoming very important, making sure that folks have the staffing needed to administer all the immunizations and testing that are required, the staffing necessary to provide chronic disease management, all these things that certainly showcase the value of the pharmacist, and really point toward, not that the boards are going to be involved in changing the pharmacy payment model, but all these things actually point in that direction. So I think making sure the regulations are in place to foster that type of practice is really going to be important moving forward.
And I do appreciate the patient safety aspect, but I'm going to go back to the evolution concept, and we don't want to go back to the way we were before COVID. We both said that today. And in the only way we can make sure and ensure that we don't go back to that same practice struggle that we had is to truly embrace change at the Board of Pharmacy level. And I think in a conversation, John, you and I had a bit ago, maybe half the states, if that many, made changes to allow the technicians expanded privilege to immunize and to take and do other things to ease that burden for the pharmacist. If you look at the Board of Pharmacy and you get that evolution at that level, you change the practice. I think that the struggle we're having in recruiting and getting folks interested in pharmacy as a profession would dramatically change, because I think people would welcome the opportunity to work in an environment where they are able to help patients every day, as opposed to, you know, being responsible for that prescription and only that prescription.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're spot on with those comments, and I would welcome Christina's comments. I'm sure with Christina, with you being in academia, you've seen a decline in admissions and people that are interested in pharmacy as a profession. And I think if that's going to level off and hopefully start to turn in the other direction, I think prospective students are going to need to see that the pharmacy workplace, whether it's community, I mean, independent or chain or hospital, is going to be conducive to a professional environment and really continue to be the rewarding profession that we all want it to be.
So the first thing I would say is, you know, the perspective of the students has definitely evolved over the last, I would say, you know, 3 to 5 years, and then obviously sort of accelerated during the pandemic. I think a lot of colleges of pharmacy and schools of pharmacy have had challenges with admission rates. It's kind of that dirty little secret that we don't really want to discuss within the academic realm, that we have really seen a drop off in interest. And part of that is because we've had a lot of bad press. You know, so one of the things that I've been, you know, very thankful to have the opportunity to do during this pandemic is to really step up within my local media market to, you know, be a healthcare media contributor and, you know, be on my local television station and contribute as a health expert. Around the pandemic, we need to do a better job with the PR, you know, around the profession. You know, if people are only seeing the negative stories and they're only seeing the technicians leaving in droves and the pharmacists complaining about their work conditions, you know, that doesn't really bode well to people wanting to go into the profession. So I think, you know, unfortunately, you know, one bad story drowns out all the good. And so I think we need to do several things in order to assist with this. One is that we do need to change the conditions and we need to be able to work smarter, not harder. And, you know, we can't just keep piling on responsibilities without giving the appropriate resources in order to perform those jobs and perform those jobs safely and with the patient-centered care in mind. Because all of this really is to deal with a broken healthcare system. Let's just put it out there and be honest. You know, if we had enough primary care providers and we had enough public health infrastructure to deal with the stresses that this pandemic has brought on, we wouldn't need to lean so heavily on pharmacies and pharmacists, right? So like, we really need to think about the crux and the underlying issues that cause the situation to be the way it is. And then, you know, once that is addressed, I think one of two things is going to happen. Either we're going to see pharmacists take a step back, or we're going to see pharmacists take a leap forward. And I am hopeful that the latter is what ends up happening. Obviously, as a clinician and someone who has not had to work within the dispensing realm for quite a while, I see sort of the, you know, the evolution of what the pharmacy profession can become. And I've had that luxury because I've worked in academia, and it's given me a lot of flexibility within things that I want to do and sort of my own personal goals for community engagement and, you know, helping with vulnerable populations and, you know, marginalized communities. But I think every pharmacist can advocate for their own community. And we can do that by asking, you know, and demanding that our abilities to practice at this, you know, the top of our license are really being done. And as Ed mentioned before, we can only do that through legislation and through, you know, through active changes at the Board of Pharmacy or at the federal level, because, you know, the federal government under an emergency provision was able to make these changes nationwide. Well, if they were able to do it under the emergency provision, why can't we just change it at the federal level and make it so? Right. So I think, you know, there's multiple things that we can do. I think we definitely need more pharmacist representation in state houses, and we need more pharmacist representation at the federal level in Congress and in the Senate, because if there's no one there to speak up for our profession, then there's no one there to advocate for us, to shepherd through the process these bills and legislations to solidify us as the most accessible healthcare professional and the clinician and the provider that we really are.
Obviously, we need to do that inside the profession. But what can we do? It would seem to me that based upon all that's gone on during COVID, it would seem to me that public health or public health entities could also advocate on behalf of pharmacy and really talk about the important role that pharmacists have played during the pandemic and really need to play moving forward. I mean, what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't run the world, but if I, all things being equal and being perfect, you know, I would advocate that there should be a pharmacist in every department of health in the country, which would drastically expand our ability to have that infrastructure and workforce, right? So much of public health is medication-based because so much of public health is communicable disease management, right? So if every department of health had a pharmacist, a dedicated pharmacist, you know, think of the implications of that, right? You know, when I started, gosh, almost two decades ago, working in my county health department, it was a novelty and they didn't know what to do with me. And then by the time I left a decade later, they didn't know what they were going to do without me. So I think it's hard when you don't know what you need.
So we've really identified two distinct areas here that need to really help us to evolve to where we want to be today. And Christina, you know, going backwards truly is not an acceptable path. We do and we must embrace the future. And your role in public health and some of your comments, having a pharmacy in public health is that's wonderful. Getting public health to change, is that going to be as difficult of a journey as it is to address the boards of pharmacy across the country and get them uniformly to embrace change as well?
So I don't think so. I actually don't think it's going to be as heavy as a lift as I think it might have been if you had asked me that same question before the pandemic. I think we've really established, you know, the benefits of having that direct collaboration between departments of health and pharmacies. You know, that was the whole thought process behind the federal pharmacy program, was because they needed an extension to existing public health services because the infrastructure did not have the ability to respond and be nimble and be flexible to the moment. And pharmacies did. Because they already had the existing structure to kind of rev up and, you know, cycle down as needed as the pandemic, you know, kind of ebbed and flowed. And so I think, especially when it comes to like long-term care, I think this was another really key provision that happened at the beginning of the pandemic that we don't really talk a lot about, is that we were really able to get our elderly vaccinated extremely quickly because of the collaborations between health departments and pharmacies and them going out to long-term care facilities and being able to do mass vaccinations for that population because we knew that they were at high risk. And I was hopeful that those relationships and those partnerships would continue, but unfortunately they sunsetted as well. So these are all things that I think that we need to go back to the drawing board and say, hey, what are the things that were sort of, you know, unknown blessings of the pandemic and the things that we want to keep? And what are the things that we saw that were maybe negative that the pandemic exacerbated that we want to fix? Because we can't go back to where things were, right? I think we really need to adjust and think about how do we continue the positives and fix the negatives, not just ignore them, but actually do our best to actually come up with meaningful solutions to the problems that the pandemic really shone more light to.
So much of our focus in our pharmacy press centers on our organizations of pharmacy, talking about ourselves as a profession and getting some parity, fixing, of course, the reimbursement model. And John, are you hearing any clamor at all about this role of public health and the collaboration with pharmacy and how that's truly really helped us to realize some of these expanded privileges? And then we need to go on to that rest of the story that when these emergency decrees do go away, and if things continue to improve, if the federal government steps back, what then happens to both pharmacy and public health when we separate and go back to our ways? And how much of a struggle is that going to be?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of discussion about it, Ed. I mean, certainly, you know, once the federal decrees go away, everything reverts back to the states, and each state is different. I guess that's both good and bad. Each state health department is different. Again, good and bad. So it's really going to be individualized by the state. And you know, I'll mention NCPA has been part of a group called the Navigators, and basically what that is a partnership of pharmacy and public health that started pretty soon after the pandemic began. And we've been meeting, you know, weekly ever since. There have been a couple of summits, and the group really comes together to discuss issues that are important to both public health and pharmacy. Association of Immunization Managers is part of that group. The group that represents the immunization registries is part of that group. And again, I think it's been a really an eye-opening experience in terms of public health getting a better understanding of what pharmacists and pharmacies are capable of offering. And the flip side is also true. And again, I know we've been focused on the pandemic and the collaboration that has resulted over the last 2 years. But Christina mentioned there's so many other opportunities for pharmacy and public health to work together, such as, you know, contraception and smoking cessation and things like that. And I really like what you said, Christina, that every pharmacist is really a public health pharmacist when you think about it. So yeah, it's a long-winded answer to your question, but I think the public health opportunity for pharmacy is really on everybody's radar screen.
Christina, you said one bad story and overshadows all the good. I'm sitting here thinking that if we are not proactive today and we don't emphasize the need for change, once we can get past the immediate threat of this pandemic, we will not succeed, and there will be a lot of struggles. Public health will struggle. Pharmacy will go back to struggling as well. I'm fearful that this momentum that's in play today may not continue. And what do we think? What needs to happen? How can we, and with our audience, how can we all do something today to help this continue to move forward?
I would say, in addition to the legislative aspect, we also need to get some of these larger community pharmacy chains on board as well. So, you know, if the Walgreens and the CVSs and the grocery store chains like Kroger, if they're not advocating for it, then it makes it even more difficult, right? And then the burden goes on our independent pharmacies, which, by the way, have done amazing jobs of handling all of the stresses of these, you know, of the pandemic and the added workload. And that's disproportionate, right? Like, we need to fix that. And so we also need to figure out the political will, right? So if we, you know, are sort of this doomsdayer and say, you know, if all of these things sunset and we go back to the way that things were, and these states that don't have the provisions in place for vaccinations and testing and allowing, you know, pharmacy technicians to immunize, if all of that goes away, we basically will, you know, revert back to, you know, not being able to provide these services, and we will not be able to respond to the next variant. We will not be able to respond to the next outbreak. We will not be able to respond to the next, you know, shift and change that this virus tells us, and or the next pandemic. So here's the thing, like, we're very focused on COVID-19, but, you know, the same circumstances that led to this pandemic, those are all things that are potentially, you know, able to occur anywhere in the world, you know, where you see live markets where there is a lot of, you know, animals that are in the same space. Like, there was just a report that came out again today saying that they are almost, you know, certain that this virus originated in an animal source, and that it made the leap from animals to humans, which is considered to be a zoonotic virus. And the conditions for that are all over the world, you know, as we've seen, you know, mass populations, you know, not having the you know, the safest practices around handling, you know, all these different species. So, you know, we need to focus not only on what to do right now, but what are we going to do in the future when the next pandemic hits? Because we've realized that we are absolutely not equipped to deal with this kind of strain, not just the strain on society, because we've all had this collective trauma, but we're also not able to deal with the psychological issues around all the death that's occurred. And how do we deal with that moving forward as a society? So I think there are multiple aspects to this that are beyond just us as a profession. But I do think that we have been that home, that medical home for so many that lack access to care. And we want to remain that beacon of hope and light for our communities.
I will tell you from personal experience, having spent a considerable amount of time corporate chain environments, that the chains do look to the future. They have advocates at the board of pharmacy level, at the state level, at the and then when I say the state level, the state legislative level. They also have representatives in the federal level. They do a considerable amount of lobbying and support all of our organizations of pharmacy to embrace change, to change the profession of pharmacy to all of what we would like to envision. Because I believe that, and as we're seeing the great success that CPESN has been able to realize, that when you separate pharmacy services, fulfillment from service, you're really able to create a sustainable pharmacy model. The chains, all of the chains, and I can't lump them all together, because the business models of the Walgreens and the CVSs of the world are very different than the grocery chains. They're very different than the big box and the mass merchandisers. They all have different focus, different types of patients, and their practice needs to be specific for their customer base. And they've all embraced that. They are all struggling, as we are today, to be able to provide all this service to their prescription customers when their prescription reimbursement is basically near zero. That's what you're seeing today, the big, big struggle that the bigger the store, even down to the single independent owner, is struggling today to provide service without reimbursement because they can't sustain a service model based on only the fulfillment reimbursement, because there isn't anything there. It's something that is being felt at all levels. And I believe that everybody's in on it. It's just, we just need that magic potion to really get some true change to the profession of pharmacy. Technicians' roles realized, pharmacists' true role realized, and legislative action to allow all that, working with the payer community to be sure that pharmacists are paid for their prescriptions appropriately, prescriptions they fill, that is, and then getting that service model and making sure that what happened to the reimbursement for prescription fulfillment, to make sure that doesn't happen to the service aspect of pharmacy as well. Because it, you know, we should not have that kind of struggle moving forward. And it's going to take a lot to get that to change. Christina, you bring the public health aspect in. And to John's point, creating that collaboration and getting public health to embrace pharmacy ongoing and be an advocate for us can only be a help to us.
Yeah, I just wanted to quickly mention, so the American Public Health Association, they have individual state chapters. So that's actually something that I had the pleasure of being able to do, is I was actually the president of my state chapter of APHA, the American Public Health Association. That is something that I don't see a lot of pharmacists getting involved in. And so when we talk about state association, being involved in the public health associations, I think is really powerful. And they have a very big legislative arm at the national level, and they have a pharmacist SIG. It's just not, I mean, it's active, but I think it could be more active. And I think those kinds of collaborations between pharmacists and public health could be more meaningful if we really engaged with them more. And so I did want to bring that up, that that is a way that we could see partnership that could be expanded beyond what the current involvement is.
So Christina, are students introduced to that organization during their professional school time?
So I can say I did, but I mean, I'm kind of a lone wolf. I think there's one other, so between myself and then there's one other pharmacist that's been a state association president of the American Public Health Association in the country. There's not like an affiliate schools and colleges of pharmacy. So I think that would be something that we would have to talk more about. Right now, I think the SIG is more practicing pharmacists and pharmacists that work within the public health services and places like the FDA and the CDC and Indian Health Services and the Department of Corrections. So it is more like that traditional role of what we think of when we think of a public health pharmacist. But yeah, I absolutely think that there is more room for, you know, community pharmacists, you know, the roles of like even hospital pharmacists for things like infection prevention. There's a ton of things that we could partner with public health on that I think we could do a better job of educating our students on when they're still in training. There are, you know, public health fellowships for pharmacists within the CDC and within the FDA. They're just not often taken by pharmacists. And so I think we just need to do a better job of telling students that those opportunities exist.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think back to the time when I was in pharmacy school, which was a long, long time ago. And when people mentioned public health, the first thing and maybe the only thing that they thought about was Indian Health Services. And I still wished I had one of the Indian Health Services rotations when I was in pharmacy school, because I think that was a wonderful way to practice pharmacy. And obviously we've come a long way since those days. But yeah, I'm glad you brought that organization up.
Christina, you've been a great addition to this conversation today, and we really thank you for being with us and appreciate you taking time to share your important message. Christina, some final thoughts, and then John, I'll turn it to you and we'll close up.
My final thought is be the change you want to see. So I really believe that when we embody and manifest the changes that we want to see, then that's when actions, they move us forward. And so, you know, if we don't ask, then nothing will change, right? So speak up, make your voice heard. And, you know, if you are enjoying these new additions to the workflow, granted they are challenging because it's more work, but if you feel strongly that you are impacting your communities and you are truly making a meaningful difference and a change, let's fight for it. Let's fight to keep it and continue to do the good that we all want to see.
Well said, Christina. My comments really have to do with, you know, continuing to embrace all the changes that have come about as a result of COVID, continue or become active politically and legislatively, you know, join your state and national association, because they're certainly advocating on your behalf, both for practice issues as well as workplace issues. You know, the future, despite all the challenges, I think the future is very bright.
I can't agree more. To any pharmacist that feels that their single voice doesn't matter, I encourage them to reach out to any of us, because every voice is an important voice. It's just, we all need to band together. We all need to support each other, you know, and really embrace change. And not just changes in the workplace, not just changes in staffing and such, but true change to the profession that will ensure that pharmacy will be a viable healthcare profession for many, many generations to come. And with that, I thank you all for listening to another episode of Move the Needle Podcast. And I hope you enjoy what you're hearing, and stay tuned for future episodes. Thank you.